We're not going to be in the fields anytime soon, but does that give you more time to put together a plan for the succession on the farm, or just more time to make sure the planter's in good shape? Bridget Finke joins us once again this morning. Bridget, of course, with Valley Crossing Law Offices in the Baldwin area. And I guess when we're putting together these succession plans or LLCs or something like that, we don't care about the weather. We just want to get it done as soon as possible. All it does is give us a little more time to maybe pay attention to the books and the agreements and everything we want to put in these things until we get in the fields.
Yeah, got to try to take advantage of these times when they present themselves, try to find that silver lining on what I'm sure is a frustrating time for guys that are ready to go.
Yeah, it really is. And so you can't take your mind off of those things and start thinking about spring planning, so get those done. One of the things we haven't talked a lot about over the times we've visited, Bridget, are leases, and we always think it's a land lease. You know, some people are leasing buildings to milk cows and different things like that. And how strong are these strong legal documents, a lease, a contract, and how in-depth can we go with putting terms in a lease?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, leases are legal contracts, and so that's something that I encourage my clients to get and to get in writing. And a lot of times people are resistant to that because, hey, I've been, you know, renting from Bob for years, mm-hmm. and we got our arrangement and it's fine. But, you know, things happen. Bob has a stroke. Bob passes away. If you're
tough to shake hands with Bob anymore. Those old handshake agreements as we grew up with.
Exactly. And, you know, for a lot of guys, if you're under the restrictions of needing a certain number of acres secured for your manure disposal, et cetera, you know, those are some pretty important agreements that are probably worth getting in writing. And so sometimes I think people have been hearing the message about that and they're getting something in writing. But a lot of times it's not a whole lot in writing. And so I know particularly in Dunn County, UW Extension has some really good resources for people of things to consider about actually getting all the right terms in there. You know, we might want to say what actual land it is, not that just that it's 150 acres in some county.
But actually identifying it on a plat map.
On a plat map, real estate tax statements, you know, a little more mm-hmm. Detail there. So step one is let's get something in writing. Step two, let's try to get all of that stuff in writing. But then sometimes knowing that, sometimes that ground is real important to us, but maybe neighbor Bob doesn't want to sell now because he'd have to pay a whole bunch of taxes, but he might want to sell sometime in the future. Kind of the third level of that is maybe building in some purchase rights. If you're the renter on there, that you've got a shot that if Bob is ready to sell, that he comes and sees you first.
So how does that work? Is it a very simple paragraph, or is there, again, clauses to that as well?
Sure. There's a whole range of options that we can do. And I think the thing that people tend to have heard of is right of first refusal.
You're right.
I hear a lot of times, you know, I want to write a first refusal on that.
So if another guy comes in and says, I'll give you $5,000 an acre, the landowner can come to you and say, I've gotten this offer. Do you want to pay $5,000?
Exactly. So you do have that third party involved, right? It's always about somebody else coming and making an offer. And so that's a great right for the farmer renter to have, that at least they know that won't be, you know, snagged out front of mm-hmm. under them without even getting a chance to match the deal. But a lot of times there's a step actually before that. Often what the farmer really wants is, hey, Bob, if you're ready to sell before you go out and try to find another buyer, come talk to me first. And so that's what I call a right of first offer. And so we can build that right in as well. And often we'll pair those two together. So think of that right of first offer as an exclusive negotiation period. You give me notice that you want to sell, and we've got this period of time where we see if we can come to terms.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't, then fine, go out in the market. So you're ridiculous and you think you should get $8,000 an acre. I'll say, hey, Bob, you go see if you can get $8,000 an acre. And if you do, then you can come back with that third party offer and give me the chance to match it. So often I'll pair those two things together. Give us a right of first offer. Let's see if we can make a deal. Or worst case scenario, we can't. You get a third party offer, at least you got a chance to match the deal.
Is this right of offer good once. In other words, a farmer says to you that holds a lease contract, I want to sell. We can't work out a deal. He goes out and he still can't work out a deal with another third party. And then a year later, I want to sell. Does he still have an obligation to come to you, or is that only a one-time right offer?
How you put that language in the contract.
And so more usually, language.
Yeah, I know, right? Lawyers and all their words. But it is about, and typically I'll say, because sometimes it's even, maybe you've got 300 acres and you only want to sell 100.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, from my side of it, I'm going to want to still, if you only sold the 100, I couldn't come up with the money. Okay, I understand you got to sell that, but that remaining 200, I might want that right to hang on to there. So that's where it's just sometimes I know guys like putting stuff together on their own and shaking hands, and that's great when it all works out. But sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And so questions like you asked, you know, those are pretty important. So it's probably not enough just to say, and we have a right of first refusal, period, that we might want a little more detail on that.
As far as these leases are concerned, we've got a five-year lease at $150 an acre. How locked in is that? Or, you know, when prices fall through the floor, does the landowner, you know, if the renter comes and says, well, I can't pay that, can the landowner say, okay, we'll change the lease, or no, I've got to get 150, and if I can find somebody to give me 150, that lease is broken?
Well, first of all, they can always agree to make a change.
Okay.
So sometimes the deal is, hey, you know, 150 isn't going to work for me this year. What can we drop it to 125 this year, and we'll look at 175 next year, or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. they work out as between them. Landowner can say, no, you pay me 150, or if you don't, you're in breach of contract. And I can either say contract is done and go find somebody who will pay me the 150 bucks, or I can come after you for the money that you were supposed to pay me. So everybody, if someone is not doing what they said they were going to do in the contract, each side has remedies as to what they can do about that if somebody's not going to do what they say. What I will say is, there again, if we agree to something different, put that in writing. You can just amend your existing contract. You don't have to start over, but just make clear what the new deal is.
So there should be more than just in a lease, talking about land or even renting a building, more than just the amount of money you're going to be charging and more than just the time period that this lease will be good for.
Right. A lot of times what I see is that little form that they get from the ASCS office mm-hmm. that just indicates you've got operational control. Often those don't have much detail at all. And when folks come and say, hey, this is my lease, I get real nervous, because the more blanks we leave that we haven't filled in, the more holes there are to poke in it that give somebody an out to say, we didn't even really have a contract. So we don't have to fight about whether you breached the contract or not. We didn't have a contract to start with. So if that ground is important to your operation, it's probably worth making sure you've got nice, good written documentation about what happens.
To protect both sides.
For sure, because, hey, memory is fallible.
How well I know.
Well, you wouldn't know that, right? You're way too young to be losing your memory.
Not all that young, that's for sure. But again, these leases are so very, very important. And again, they're kind of open-ended. You put in what is important to both sides.
Correct.
All right, it's that simple. Get a lease, but get all the terms on paper and signed. The handshake is wonderful, but doesn't always work in the court of law or in the family. Bridget Finke with us. Bridget's at Valley Crossing Law in the Baldwin area. And if you want to get a hold of Bridget, to talk about all these contracts, leases, whatever it may be, estate planning, the number is
715-688-4045.
That doesn't change. Bridget Finke with us, Valley Crossing Law. I'm Bob Bosold.